Greetings, everyone. This is Jonathan Alexander, editor of College Composition and Communication, and I'm here today with Rebecca Brittenham, who is the author of The Interference Narrative and the Real Value of Student Work. Joining me is also Jens Lloyd, editorial assistant for the journal. Rebecca, thank you for taking some time to talk with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So we always ask our authors to tell us a little bit about what I call the backstory of the article. How did you come to work on this particular piece? And maybe you might want to say a word or two just about what your essay does, and then give us a sense of why this essay. How did this originate for you?
This was a very odd direction for me to take. It was nothing like the work I'd been doing, and I think I came to it out of that sense of excruciating discomfort you get sometimes between my role as a faculty member teacher and my role as an administrator, so director of first year writing, sometimes the associate chair of the English department here. And as a teacher, I had been asking students to write about their work in many different contexts, from first year writing, food writing, upper level food writing classes, my graduate classes, my students were writing literacy narratives about their work. And I knew from that writing, not only how various the jobs were that students were doing, but also how interestingly students could think and talk about their work in an academic context. At the same time, I was going to meetings, all these meetings with administrators where student work was absolutely invisible. Mm-hmm. So, and kind of willed, like people don't want to hear about the jobs students are doing right now. They want to hear about the jobs students can get once they graduate from college, right? Everybody wants to talk about internships. Yes, go. Nobody wants to talk about the actual job students are doing right now. And I, you know, sort of gradually understood that that's because it's assumed that those jobs are interfering with students' retention, time to completion, graduation rates, all the things that are busting us as a university is this interference of student work. So yeah, there was a complete invisibility of it, and in these meetings, and the high visibility of it in classes. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to at least do a conference paper or something about this. I need to find out what other students are doing with their work. I had the data from my institution, but those numbers just sit there, like, there's the numbers for my institution, there's the numbers nationally, you know, almost half of students across the nation, full-time students, are working jobs off campus. Over 80% part-time students are working jobs off campus, usually 20 or more hours a week. But, you know, those numbers just sit there. So I thought it would be really interesting to find out more about what students actually do on their jobs.
Right.
To get students to talk about actual experiences on the jobs. So I've been teaching Mike Rose's great, you know, the Mind at Work, this great book, where he really tries to look at the specificity of work, allow for the multidimensionality of work. And that gave me an idea of how to frame the survey to really ask about specifics, like what's a typical experience on the job? What's your day like on a typical day like on the job? In addition to the kinds of questions like how many hours a week are you working, and you know, what kind of overlaps do you see between your work and your academic work? And then once I got the survey responses, I couldn't go back from there because, you know, this was an anonymous survey. Our students are busy. They did not have to answer that. And so many students wrote and wrote voluminously, you know, and I realized it wasn't just generosity. It was also that they wanted to talk about their work. You know, they were happy somebody asked them about their jobs. So after that, I couldn't go back. I had to do something with those responses. And I felt a huge responsibility. That was the hardest part of this project. It really almost killed me to figure out a way to frame those responses in a way that would be respectful and convey and represent them in some meaningful but meaningful way, but with integrity. So every kind of framework, kind of theoretical framework I tried to bring to those responses had its own kind of skewing impact. And that was really, first, I wasn't used to kind of doing that data-driven sort of scholarship. And second, I really felt a huge responsibility to those students who had responded. So that was a struggle.
The responsibility really comes through. And I'm wondering if the responders to your original surveys felt that responsibility as well to help make visible something which, as you say, is often just disparaged or discredited as interfering with the real quote-unquote work of being a student. And what I appreciate about the article is the way in which the student voices come through. And we hear from them, and in particular, hearing a student talk about struggling and knowing that they have to do well in school if I want to be able, quote, to someday not be struggling like this. And it's poignant, and a reminder not only of the economic situation of many of our students, but also the motivation to go to school. And I can't help but think, like you, that we're missing an opportunity to really help our students not only understand their worlds, but think about them critically and through writing, by disparaging and discrediting, by making less visible the work that they're doing now. Please tell me more.
Yeah, I think there's a huge sense of isolation. A lot of students don't realize that almost everybody else in the class is working just like them, right? They feel, you know, I've seen students doing their homework in their cars, you know, they drive here from work, they come to class, they jump back in the car, they drive, you know, I think for them to realize they're in a community that has this whole structure, the academic community is structurally part of the larger working community, is so important. Not just for the students, but for administrators to understand that we're partnering with all those minimum wage businesses that surround us, whether we admit it or not, whether we're, you know, being aware of it and doing it productively and, you know, sort of inviting partnerships like that, or whether, you know, we're partnering in students' education because they're only in our classrooms for this much of the day.
Right.
And they're getting this huge education in job skills, multitasking, discourse mobility at work. And we can either celebrate that and help them translate, you know, or not.
You make me wonder about this, is the current orientation of a lot of transfer studies right now, which always seems in my mind to be about what can we do now for a future. What about lateral transfer?
Exactly.
Students to think about other experiences they're having right now. Jens, I wonder, when you were an undergraduate, did you work?
I did. Yeah. I was a writing tutor, so maybe it was a little easy for me to see those. but to that point, Rebecca, I think the one insight that really stuck out to me in your article, and you kind of repeated it in your introduction, is this notion that students can identify and forge these intersections between their academic self and their working self far better or far more readily than we can, than
kind of academic. Yeah, I mean, this surprised me in the survey results, but I saw it again and again that students were thinking about how their skills on the job were working in the classroom and vice versa.
Yeah.
And in really complicated ways.
To that point, I'm wondering, did you notice either in your survey responses or in the courses that you've taught, that maybe two questions, and you can pick one to answer or answer both. do students kind of value or put more significance on one or the other, the kind of working self or the academic self? Do you find that? And then the other question might be, did you notice students who are resisting these intersections, students who kind of don't want to see their academic self and their working self as in any way kind of intersecting, but they want to keep them in their kind of separate worlds?
Yeah, I think there's both. And it may not even be resistance so much as a kind of built-in sort of cultural compartmentalization that they're just sort of not questioning. Or it might be active resistance in some cases. But in answer to your first question, I think it really went both ways. So I remember vividly a student in a first year writing class that was really for students who whose skill level wasn't up to college, you know, they weren't up to college skills yet. It was sort of a basic writing class. And that student was really feeling intimidated and unhappy in the academic environment, but talked about her work where she was a supervisor at a Subway in ways that really showed the confidence and sense of, respect and ownership and all those good things that she got from the job that wasn't translating into who she was in my classroom, right? But at least I could see that that was there. That was this other part of her life that was there for her, right? When she walked out of my classroom and walked into the job, she suddenly felt like a much more grown up, much more secure, powerful person. So that wasn't a situation that I could help her bridge that gap necessarily, but at least, I kind of recognized that maybe her sense about her job was more important to her right then than the classroom.
It's just fascinating material. You've identified this in your own scholarly life as a very different kind of project. Will you continue it? Is there a next stage to thinking about interference narratives and student work?
I think this article coming out is so important to me as a kind of part of what I wanted to accomplish, which was to say, hey, there's only so much we can do in our classrooms, and it's sort of humbling how little that is. Right? And then there's a bit we can do administratively, structurally in our institutions, and a very, very pitiful amount we can actually do in the world. So the pitiful amount is at least what we can do with our scholarship. So I really wanted to like hold up this picture of students at work and say, look, and I'm really appreciative to you that you're helping me do that.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure.
In a scholarly Absolutely. Way to say, just look, I just want you to see, right, the different multidimensional kinds of jobs that students are doing. And so that's just, for me, is an important part. And then the next step, I've had a lot of kind of institutional hopes, particularly in the last 8 years. In the current political climate, I don't know. I don't know, it's all up for grabs again. But institutionally, I felt like some exciting possibilities were happening. Like we were trying to set up a situation where every single student would get a work study piece instead of a loan that would put them in debt, right? So, and that we could start partnering with some of the local businesses that do have those minimum wage jobs. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. I was hoping to work, you know, not just in the classroom, but a little more structurally, institutionally.
You sound like a model for a fully engaged teacher, scholar, activist. So
it's funny, though. It's so interesting to me how those every term in the picture changes. So workplace readiness is a moving target, but so is worker, right? The word worker is a moving target. Citizen is a moving target. Those words are so constantly changing, and how they function in a particular situation. So
you've given us a great deal to think about, and I know that you're going to continue to be thinking about it with us, and I'm just delighted we get to think about it with you in the pages of the journal. So Rebecca Brittenham, The Interference Narrative and the Real Value of Student Work, coming out in the February 2017 CCC. Rebecca, thank you for joining us.
Thanks to you both.